Welcome to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Quizmaster Lee Breschneider, and I'm joined here by the great one, Mark Davis.
No nonsense as in you should know some nonsense, and also, alternately, no nonsense. Don't screw around here.
None of that nonsense.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Please quit it.
And we like that format, and we think you do too. We actually have a couple of a listener feedback items that we'd like to read.
Pieces, if you will.
Yes.
I just got a little letter from a friend of mine, Stephen Williamson, who used to live here and moved to North Carolina. He said, "You know, I work from home and spend a lot of time sitting in the office listening to the Know Nothing podcast." He wrote "Know Nothing" and later corrected himself and said, "No nonsense." Stupid autocorrect, which I don't know how.
I feel like, didn't you call it Know Nothing when you promoted it live for the first time? You're like, I'm on the Know Nothing podcast.
Absolutely.
Like, thanks. I did. It's only your podcast.
It's ours.
Yeah.
The No Nonsense podcast has kept me sane and really kept me connected to my hometown since moving to North Kakalaka. He didn't say that. I did. He just said NC. Mm-hmm. Just letting you know that you and Lee helped me get through the day. Your soothing, dulcet tones have kept my brain tickling and my mouth smiling. You are loved.
Aww.
How sweet is that?
Very sweet.
Yeah.
Very sweet. Thanks, Steve.
Very good guy.
Yeah, we got an email also from Quizmaster Josh, one of our newest patrons.
Uh-huh, yes.
Yeah, from Tennessee. He writes, so as I had mentioned in my previous message, I host a trivia night that's in a small town, but the turnout is great, usually 50 or more people. It's pretty good.
Very good, yeah.
Yeah. Josh continues, there are a couple of rules that we have and practices that I want to change, but I'm afraid of losing patrons.
Okay. I think I know what one of these is going to be.
You want to take a guess?
I'd say one of them is probably going to be no phones out during the rounds.
That is not one of them.
Okay.
Yeah. But first, given space and staff, we limit teams to a maximum of 6 people. I don't really care for this rule personally, but it helps the servers not have to manage parties of 15 unexpectedly, which, yes, a team of 15 is ridiculous. I agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's way too many people. I wonder if that's based on real experience, like there was a team of 15 once at this venue, and they were like, no. 6 is the max. What do you think about a 6-player limit on teams?
I mean, the way I always explain it when people want to have more than 6 people is, you know, even if you win, you're going to have twice as many people to split the winnings with.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try and get big tables like a table of 15 to break up into 2 or 3 teams and go, you know, battle each other, and you can, you know, rag on each other when one of you does better than the other or whatever. But, you know, if, you know, at Nice Guys is a $25 bar tab, $25 to 4 people is kind of substantial, you know, a few bucks off. But when you have 15 people, it's like you're just winning to be an asshole almost. Like, it's not like you're not really doing anything with the winnings.
It's just a cheap way to get the glory of the winning slot. It's not really even about the prize because it's so little when you split it that many ways.
Yeah, well, I also feel, I guess, kind of like, you know, the smarter you are, the less you want to have teammates.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of where Seth comes into play and things like that, where it's like, well, you know, I hesitate to say only dumb people want huge teams, but it seems
that's right, bitch. He said it.
It's like the big truck to small dick. You know, thing.
You're stereotyping. You're just basically admitting that you're stereotyotyping about it. That's fine. I mean, yeah, we all do it.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, I just think that people that want huge teams are doing that because they know they need the help and they're getting a bunch of their friends that also need help. So they ask somebody.
Right.
As opposed to being like a team like, oh, here are 4 or 5 people that are really good at certain things. And that can also split whatever they get.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about the team dynamic and how it's important to have everybody have kind of a differing set of, you know, expertises, if you will.
For sure. Or just like a bunch of good general knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's why you have a smaller team, because you need less people, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The rule I've been following since we last talked about it on the podcast is that my max team size is 7. If an 8th person tries to join the game, the teams must immediately split into 2 to keep within the rules of fair play. This can be enforced by just withholding points from teams that are breaking the rule, just like I do with the cell phones. You know, it's like, if you guys want to, you know, hang out and you know, have a big team you can play along for fun, you know, but I'm not going to be giving you any points as long as you're, you know, unified like that. And just remind everybody, you know, like you said, it's a great opportunity to break the teams down and say, hey, let's do some friendly competition here. You know, see, you know, you can try different teams every week.
It's like intergroup, you know, an intergroup dynamic as opposed to, I think there's already a lot of like laughing, you know, clapping for people who win, laughing at people if they get negative points or whatever. You know, so there's already that dynamic, but especially like breaking it down to not only are you competing against all these other teams, but you're competing against each other.
Yeah. And no one wants to hear like you're breaking the rules while they're trying to have fun, you know? So I always apologize just for the inconvenience because it is an inconvenience, you know, to be asked to like split up a group. You're expecting to like hang out with everybody. So I just, you know, apologize for the inconvenience and just remind them like, you know, we're playing for prizes. So we want to be fair to all the players in here. And usually they're understanding. If you just add those little two things, it's a good way to avoid any kind of like resentment.
Agreed. From though, the team. It's funny now that I'm thinking about it and talking about it. I don't think I've ever had, because I think a couple times we've just had like a big team. I know last night I had a group of like 8.
Yeah.
And I just let them do it. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody they had complained. One of the worst scores.
Yeah.
Because like, that's what I'm saying is like those big teams are a lot of times people that are like here with their girlfriend, but their girlfriend doesn't know anything about 90% of what's going on, or woman here with her boyfriend, or boyfriend's an idiot, you know? You know, so
yeah, there was a team too, I remember, at Three Pepper that came, and they came a couple weeks with just 2 or 3 people, and then they were like, next week we're bringing the whole family. And sure enough, they came with like 8 people, and they performed about the same.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like,
and you get to a point where your team's too big, you start talking people out of the right answers, you know.
It's weird when people have that mindset of like having a big team, they just think of the amount of people to invite, not what they know.
Yeah.
And I guess that was kind of the point I was getting at, is like they're looking about trivia all wrong. They're not inviting, you know, people who they went to school with, whom they know are, you know, have a killer GPA and all that stuff. They're just like, I'm going to invite Becca and Becca's boyfriend. He likes football. Like they're not, you know, they're seeing kind of like the big, they're not seeing the bigger picture.
Right. Right. Yeah. Look at the bigger picture, guys. Anyways, back to Josh's note here. He said, also on the podcast, I heard you mention how much you loathe multiple choice questions. Mm. Well, guess what we use for the majority of our questions? That's right. Multiple choice. The format kind of works and it keeps the teams close, but I feel it doesn't allow good players to really separate themselves. Also, writing multiple choice questions is such a chore. Okay, so the format works. It keeps teams close. I'm assuming he means there's a better chance that everybody has a chance to earn some points, and people aren't leaving with like only 10 points when they could have gotten 100 or something like that. That, frankly, I could care less about, you know? I mean, I don't
really see that kind of surprises me, because I feel like whole ad giving everybody just a point for even putting anything in was to kind of buoy people up and make them feel like.
Well, that's where I learned that mistake, Mark.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I did. And that's the thing. Like, you know, you want to just on the topic of changing rules at your venue, which is how Josh started this letter. I think if you're going to mess with your system, you have to iterate. You have to try it out, see how the change works. If it's a bad change, like that one was, giving teams a point just to take a guess, it was not favorable by the players. You know, it didn't make too big of an impact on like the players feeling like they were actually progressing. So I took it right back out, you know.
I got you.
And sometimes you might want to try that at different venues. So if you're going to make a drastic change, and if the venue has some kind of say in this stuff, just talk it over with them. Just say, hey, you know what, we're going to try something just a little different tonight and see how it works. You know, and we'll get it together. You can get them on board. So anyways, multiple choice, he says, helps to keep the teams close together, but it doesn't allow good players to really separate themselves. What do you think that means?
I think it's kind of what you were saying, that, you know, it's kind of crazy to think of someone asking you a question and your answer can literally be anything, you know, like any fucking word in any language. But when you have multiple choice, it's automatically like, I got 4 choices, not, you know, 8 trillion billion. So it's like, it's one of these 4. And then you get into, oh, does one of them sound, you know, does one of them sound familiar, like something I know? And also, what do I know is absolutely not it? because there's usually like one or two that you can kind of push out by process of elimination. So I think he's just saying that.
Well, he says good players to really separate themselves. So do you think he means like good players to have their moment to shine on the team?
I think that, and by, you know, someone, if you have multiple choice, someone is bound to get the right answer, even if they didn't know, because they just guessed.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't, you know, just by luck, someone right. is getting the right answer.
So you're not really getting a true assessment of your trivia prowess as a player if you're offered multiple choice.
Have you ever asked a question and then said, do you guys want another hint? And you have the teams that say no. They're like, no, don't give another hint.
Oh, yeah.
Because well, that...
Not just that, but people saying you gave too much information in that question.
Those are the people yep. that you're talking about. Those gotcha. Are the people that are unable to separate themselves because they're like, I know from the information given and that's it. The more information you give, the easier it gets for everybody else. This is my chance to separate myself for knowing this with less information.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And writing multiple choice questions is such a chore. We're going to have a multiple choice question as a rate my question from Josh. We're just going to save that for later.
Okay.
But lastly, I've noticed both of you typically ask a lot of pop culture trivia on the podcast. I assume this is because it's both of your wheelhouses. Guilty, right?
Yeah.
He says, I mention this because my background is in nuclear engineering and I find myself biasing questions towards science, technology, and the like. So how do you keep that in check? Like, asking chemistry and physics related questions that I feel are easy generally stump the crowd, which mm-hmm. is interesting. So, Mark, how would you say you keep that in check?
Well, we've talked about this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it was just two episodes ago or so where I mentioned the whole Charlie Watts thing where I was like, Charlie Watts is the drummer of what famous rock band? And I was like, everybody's going to know that it's the Rolling Stones. How do you not know? And it's like one team knew, maybe.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh.
Right.
I guess, like, I've never really thought, you know, about the level of difficulty, you know, stuff that I know versus everybody else. So, I mean, you know, how do you, I usually will ask friends of mine that I know don't go to trivia.
Okay.
I'll say, you know, hey, let me run some questions by you and see what they know.
See how they perform.
And kind of, yeah, and be kind of aware of how much knowledge they have also. Yeah,
what their trivia archetype is.
Right, yeah. And I would say that's probably one of the easiest ways. And, you know, then there's people like Adam who have the, you know, the Excel spreadsheet that gives point level by the amount of people that got it right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you want to get all scientific into it.
Mm-hmm. I actually did that, you know, last week I had a run of events where there were no repeat players at each event. So I was able to largely ask the same set of questions over and over again. And it was interesting to see, like, this venue nobody got it right at this venue. And this venue, most people got it right and stuff like that.
It's very, very crazy.
Very interesting. But as far as balance goes, yeah, I'm like somewhere in between. And I think we mentioned this on Adam's guest episode. I'm like in between you and Adam. You're much, much more intuitive and gut oriented. So you'll ask, like, you know, some friends, you know, questions and see how they perform. Adam has like the exact percentages of people that got it right. I have this like rotating category thing that I use basically mm-hmm. to make sure it's balanced. So the points are always the same. The categories rotate out based on week to week. There's 21 questions, 15 categories. So that means there's, you know, six or seven categories that are going to be asked twice in one night. And those two rotate out. So it's kind of like this will be a science dominated night. This will be a television dominated night based on the category. And I'll also mention on the podcast, I'm only asking 10 to 30% of the questions that I ask every week. So there's definitely right. science questions that I'm asking live that don't make it onto the podcast just because I'm trying to select my favorite questions that I think are the most interesting. And that's probably why it seems like pop culture is the most dominant in mine, at least. And of course, like, yeah, I would say pop culture is in my wheelhouse largely. We have a podcast, like we're entertainers, you know, so we right. love entertainment in all of its forms. And science, yeah, as you've listened, not so much for me, not so much, but we will have a science question coming up later. Uh-oh. I'm including that for you, Josh. Okay, should we do this? Let's do this rate my question real quick before the end of the round. We'll just wrap this all up right now.
All right. Rate my question.
We got it in there real quick. Okay. Josh continues, anyway, sorry for the mini novel here, but I'll give you an example of how I attempt to make the multiple choice questions with layers so it's not too easy. Here's the question, and then I'll talk about the layers in a second. This is the question. According to mixologists, which of the following drinks should be shaken and not stirred? So we have a Manhattan, a sidecar, a martini, or a Rob Roy.
According to mixologists?
According to mixologists. I don't know if this is an association or just generally, if he's asking around to his mixologist friends. I didn't know they had those in Tennessee. I thought that was a New York thing.
Well, a Miami thing. Nashville's a pretty big town.
I know. I'm making a stupid joke. Just ragging on Josh from Tennessee.
Just gotcha.
Yep.
One more time.
According to mixologists, which of the following drinks should be shaken and not stirred? A Manhattan, a sidecar, a martini, or a Rob Roy?
Well, do you know the answer?
He included the answer, so.
Well, shaken and not stirred, you always think of martinis because of 007.
Right.
Which makes me think that's probably not the answer. But I don't think I've ever had any of the other things. So I can either just think it's definitely not martini and I have a 75% chance of getting it right, or it's got to be martini because I definitely think it would be too easy.
I should have asked you this without giving you the multiple choices first and seeing where you landed.
I would have said martini.
You would have?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Because I don't know this is what I was saying before. I didn't know the realm of possibilities.
Right. I mean, shaken, not stirred has a strong connotation with James Bond.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So it's like, well, it's probably not that because that would be too easy, but I'm in a field of hundreds of drink names, both that I know and don't. So why would I even bother like guessing into the void when I have one answer that's right in front of me? And that's the one that is mentioned. So you know what? I've convinced myself now. I know it isn't, but I'm going to go with martini.
So if you had gone with your intuition to avoid martini, you would have had a better chance.
My head is in a very weird space right now.
Yeah, but you would have to guess into the void sidecar to get correct.
Yeah,
sidecar
which
is the
I
one
would not have
that's shaken and not stirred.
Ever.
And again, yeah, as a pop culture aficionado, I'm going right to martini because of the James Bond connection. That's what I would probably write down if it was just a blank. And even if I was given these options, I would probably still probably pick martini, just as you did. Josh says, in the question, you'll see that it is simple, or seemingly simple, but first you must know what liquors are intended to be stirred, typically all drinks made with entire spirits. Then you have to be familiar with what is in each of the choices. So I try to have layers. I feel like if I already know all of that stuff, I'm going to know the answer to this probably. You know, the multiple choice does not help me along, like, because I need to know those layers. You know, because I don't know what's in a sidecar. You know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess I'll have to order one and maybe ridicule them if they stir it instead of shaking it. But anyway, as far as questions go, I like the question. It's a fine question on its own. I don't know that the multiple choice really helps me along at all.
Well, I mean, what do you mean by helps you along?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm just, I guess my assumption is that if I'm offered choices, it should be a little easier. I mean, that is our rationale that we've given on the podcast for not asking multiple choice questions in the past.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
So, not that it's the quizmaster's, you know, responsibility to, you know, help you get the correct answer. You know, we're just concerned with presenting factual information in an entertaining way that promotes conversation. I think that's kind of like our role, you know, and running the game itself, the mechanics of the game. But yeah, I don't know. I think I would prefer, like you said, Josh, writing multiple choice answers is already a pain because then you have to select, you know, a fair amount of other answers. You probably don't want to have one that's like obviously wrong, you know, as like a joke. So you have to come up with like multiple potential wrong answers. It just seems like a hassle. I don't know. If I were you, I would just switch to non-multiple choice.
Yeah, honestly. I mean, I do think that the benefit of multiple choice is that you're throwing a lifeline to people who
have no clue.
Have no question. Yeah.
Yep.
Which is, you know, maybe a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I would get higher scores at mine if I had multiple choice questions.
Yeah.
Because there are questions I ask where people are just like, there's no way to know this shit, you know? And if they have one of four choices, then they automatically have a much narrowed, you know, percentage chance of winning.
Right. Right.
Or getting, or at least, you know, getting something right.
True. All right. Well, thanks for the Rate My Question, Josh. If you have a Rate My Question or any information about trivia nights that you attend or run yourself, please write us. We love Rate My Questions and listener feedback. NoNonsenseTrivia@gmail.com.
Mm.
Let's go ahead and do our weekly wrap up right quick before we get into our first round.
In a jiff.
Yep. First, at number three last Thursday, the Squeaky Chairs won the evening with 89 points. Then on Monday, last week, it was Seth who took the victory, pushing his way back into the top 10 at that venue with a final score of 92. And then finally on Wednesday, it was the Southwest Florida Hackerspace that won at Bury Me Brewing, earning 101 points overall, claiming the fourth highest winning score at that location. So we have some movement on our overall venue scores there. How did your teams do on Wednesday at Nice Guys Pizza?
They did well. Jamie's team this week was called A Cock and Lips Now. They won the first round. Maybe another team.
Directed
won the first
by Francis Ford Coppola.
Very good.
Thank you.
They won the second round with 34 points, but they were not able to hold on. Lando Calrissian.
I'm noticing a theme. Did you prompt them?
No, I did not. This was Dallas Robinson's team.
Ah.
With his friend Sean. They won the night with 53 points.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, let's, since Dallas just came up, let's do our miscorrection right now, too.
Okay. Bump, 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 bump.
Forgot the theme. Dot, 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 dot.
Ready? That's the theme.
Miscorrection. No, let's do it. Bump, 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 bump,
bump, bump, bump, bump, bump. Miscorrections.
Yeah, yeah. We had a miscorrection. I talked about Dallas having the question. This is in the middle of the weekly wrap-up. We're doing this. I just noticed. Oops. We asked about the song All For You, and I said it was by... I thought it was Sister Hazel, but it was really by Delamitri. All For You is by Sister Hazel. But the song Roll With Me, which is what Dallas played, is by Delamitri.
Yes.
Those songs sound very similar to each other.
You think so?
Yes, I do. And
I mean, I guess it's kind of like well as mid-tempo acoustic guitar rock.
Blues Traveler's Runaround also fits within the same... Okay. I don't know if it's a chord progression. I haven't studied them, but I found a tweet when I was like looking this up. I found a tweet by an ESPN writer from like 5 years ago that said this. It was like, these three songs are all the same song. And I was like, retweet, 5-year-old retweet. So Fletcher sent in that miscorrection. The song is Roll With Me by Delamitri, not All For You by Sister Hazel.
Do, bu, yeah. Bu, 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 little baby, is it everything I also, you want?
I also read an interview with the songwriter of that. And he says, yeah, I know. I say baby a lot. It was like the only thing I had that would fit. So I just went with it. They did not expect that to be the hit off the album.
Does that music video have something to do with a baby?
I don't. I've never seen the video. My Delamitri deep dive only went so far. I said, good enough. Good enough. Anyway, Lando Calrissian?
Jizian.
Calrissian.
Yes.
Dallas's team. How'd they do?
They did good. They won.
Oh, they were the winners.
They were the winners.
What was
yeah.
So? What did you bring up Jamie's team? You just want to read his team name out?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh,
always.
My bad. Okay. Yeah.
Always.
Every read the team name always. All right. Cool. Cool. That's cool. Well, if you missed any of our events and you want to join us this week, you can join us at Three Pepper Burrito Company for a regular Monday night trivia, March 11th at 7:30. Bury Me Brewing Company's No Nonsense Trivia Challenge is on March 13th, Wednesday. at 7 p.m. And then afterwards, we'll go over and see Mr. Gigglesworth himself, Mark Davis, at Nice Guys Pizza, enjoying some trivia beer and pizza from them. That's on March 13th at 9. And then we'll be at Number 3 Craft Brews and Beer Bar on March 14th. That show starting at 7:30. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'll get through.
All right.
Remember, I was just thinking of, there's no good reason to know Ray Romano's kids' names. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Which are Matthew, Gregory. I've already forgotten the other two now. Do you remember them?
Jesus Christ.
All right.
Alexandra.
That's right.
And Joseph, I think.
Joseph? Very biblical.
He's a biblical man.
All right. Well, if you missed our events and you want to join us this week, you can find more information about all of our live events online at nononsensetrivia.com. All of the No Nonsense events are free to play. You can win various prizes after every round. Join us.
Won't you?
All right, time for a break, and then getting into some trivia, round one. All right, we've already taken care of two of our pieces of business, our Rate My Question or Miscorrection. So let's just get into the trivia.
Let's just do it. Let's just kick the door in.
Yeah, round one. Here we go.
Here's your first question.
All right.
Stendhal syndrome. That's S-T-E-N-D-A-H-L. Mm-hmm. Stendhal syndrome.
Yeah.
Is a psychosomatic disorder that causes rapid heartbeat, dizziness, fainting, confusion, and even hallucinations. When an individual is exposed to an experience of great personal significance, particularly viewing what?
Their own body while on mushrooms. no, that's a joke answer. Stendhal syndrome. Mm-hmm. So they basically have a panic attack when they view something of great personal significance.
Exposed to an experience of great personal significance, particularly viewing what?
Is there anything more personally significant than looking at your own reflection in a mirror? Or am I just a narcissist? I don't know. My first thought was like, you know, picture of their children, personal significance. I mean, this is like really a question of human values. You know, like what do people... signify as the most important that would cause people with Stendhal syndrome to, you know, go into a psychosomatic, it's basically a panic attack, what you described, right?
Mm-hmm. Well.
Rapid breathing, rapid heart rate.
Heartbeat, mm-hmm. Dizziness, mm-hmm. Fainting,
yeah.
Confusion, and even hallucinations.
Stendhal syndrome. I'm going to go with own reflection. I don't know why. I just feel like, I don't know. I'm not familiar with Stendhal syndrome at all. So
that kind of surprises me. Yeah. That's a really good guess, but the correct answer is art.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. Wow. Yeah. Art is too much to handle.
Yep.
For individuals diagnosed with Stendhal syndrome. Assuming that's named after somebody named Stendhal.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the doctor who... founded it.
I don't know. Sounds like a quack, personally. Well, you know, I mean, art should move you.
Yeah, I don't know if you should
successful
hallucinate.
Art. Yeah. All right. Here's your first question. In the late 1860s, Charles and Max Fleischmann created America's first commercially produced what? Charles and Max
1860?
Fleischmann. Late 1860s.
I'm going to guess, the only thing I can really think to go by is margarine. Because I know there was a Fleischmann's margarine. So I'm going to say margarine.
I think that they might have expanded into margarine at some point, but the answer is, Mr. Pretzelman, yeast. Yeast. Mm. You can still buy Fleischmann's yeast to this day. After being first shown at the Centennial Exhibition in Philadelphia in 1876, the company grew to 14 manufacturing facilities and is still the most popular brand of yeast today.
Fantastic.
Yeah, there's actually another modern connection. Charles Fleischmann's great-great-great-granddaughter is actually Elizabeth Holmes, who you might know from recent science news. She is the founder and former CEO of Theranos, a now-defunct company known for its false claims to have devised revolutionary blood tests that use very tiny amounts of blood. So she is connected to the Fleischmann yeast empire, in case you didn't know.
Yeah. That's why we use Red Star yeast.
Ooh.
Just throwing some shade. Yeah,
yep.
No big whoop.
Respect your ancestors.
You talked about
don't do them dirty.
Pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
Some current pop culture. On the reality TV show The Masked Singer, who was the first person unmasked?
All right. The first person unmasked. So I just learned about the show on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I believe
last episode.
I've not gone and looked at it. And I'm assuming that the first person unmasked happened long ago, not in the recent finale. So because I think there were more, maybe there were only three contestants. I know three contestants on the show is what I'm saying. And they were all, I believe, exposed last week, which would be Donny Osmond. I want to say Gloria Gaynor and T-Pain. I believe T-Pain won, if I've been scrolling the news and seeing not fake news.
Gladys Knight, not Gloria Gaynor.
My bad. So those are the three names I know that are associated with The Masked Singer. And I'm going to say that Donny Osmond was the first to be unmasked. That's my best guess. Donny Osmond.
The correct answer is Antonio Brown.
Oh, okay. So this was earlier in the season. Yeah. Okay. Antonio Brown. I don't even know who that is.
He's a football player.
Oh, they're not all professional singers.
Correct.
Oh, it's kind of like Dancing with the Stars. Like they're some people are out of their element.
Yeah. Except you don't know who is who.
Interesting. So he must have a good singing voice then.
No, he was the first person out.
Well, I mean, so they had a range right off the bat.
Yeah, if you're judging by talent.
I got to check the show out. It sounds
fun. I'm telling you, it is.
Have you watched it this whole time?
I watched the whole thing.
You held out on me. You didn't even mention it to me.
I binged it all in one day, the night of the finale.
Oh, okay.
And I got off work, went to trivia. I got off trivia and went home and I watched it.
I see. Okay. You're forgiven.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Got a movies question for you. Just going to roll with this pop culture thing.
Let's do it.
What 1982 coming-of-age comedy featured Nicolas Cage's first ever film role, a movie which stars two other Best Actor Oscar winners?
What year?
1982.
Coming of age comedy?
Yep. And it co-stars two other Best Actor Oscar winners.
This is a really good question. I'd rate this question high.
Thank you. It's credited as Nicholas Coppola.
Wow, that long ago, huh? Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Cockula. Cockalock.
Cockalock. Best Actor winners or nominees?
Nicolas Cage has won Best Actor Oscar, as well as two other co-stars in this movie.
In this movie.
Yep.
Coming of age, 1982.
Coming of age comedy. No one won for this movie.
No.
But they went on to greatness.
I don't know.
Not slamming this movie or anything. I'm just saying no Oscar winners came directly from their performances, to clarify. Early 80s coming of age comedy film.
I have no idea.
Do you want the other actors?
Fast Time at Ridgemont High.
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
That's right.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah. That's right. Yep. Nicolas Cage auditioned for the role of Brad, the lead in the movie, but was cast as Brad's bud, who appears in the fast food scenes where he's at work.
Oh, okay.
He's like in the background, like poking his head out. Nicolas Cage. Sean Penn was also in Fast Times. You know that.
Yep.
Do you remember what movie he won Best Actor?
Dead Man Walking?
No. It was in 2003. The movie came out in 2003.
I don't know.
Mystic River.
Oh, shit. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Recently mentioned. And the third Oscar winner in Fast Times at Ridgemont High would be Forrest Whitaker, the director of Waiting to Exhale and Hope Floats, who won Best Actor Performance for The Last King of Scotland in 2006.
Sufferer of psoriasis.
Ptosis?
Ptosis.
Ptosis, yeah. All right. So that's my second question for you, good sir.
Here is your third question. In what year did Halo 2 come out? You were a big Halo fan?
Yeah, and I believe I went out at midnight this year to buy this game. In my opinion, and I know this is not shared by many gamers, and maybe this is a little nostalgia kicking in, Halo 2, best Halo game, in my opinion. Yep. It's the one I had the most fun playing with my friends. It's before online play, so you had to get together, you know, same room.
Throw pillows at each other.
Get a quad screen going, or four TVs and four Xboxes, which we did once, I believe.
Jeez.
Yeah, we rigged it up. Just took over the whole house. Halo 2, I'm going to say it's somewhere between 2003 and 2004. I'm going to go with 2005. I feel like I've got a broad range of like 5 years that's right in the middle.
2004.
That was close.
Should have split the difference.
Yep. Yep. I should have.
Got cocky.
Yeah. Did you ever play the Halo games?
You know, I would always, because you and Nick and everybody would, I would always just watch. I was not.
Okay. Yeah.
I wasn't too into
it. Were like a early esports aficionado.
Exactly.
Go over your friend's house and just watch them play. You know,
it's basically the localized version of Twitch.
Yeah. All right. My third question for you. This is an art history question.
Oh, boy.
What artist was part of the graffiti duo SAMO, S-A-M-O, in the Lower East Side of Manhattan in the 1970s before exhibiting neo-expressionist paintings in museums and galleries internationally in the 1980s before dying at age 27 in 1988?
If I know this, and I think I do, I will be very, very happy. When you said art history, I almost threw in the towel.
Right. But you might know this one, huh?
I think I do. But I'm having a mini freak out because I'm trying to make sure the name I know is the right name.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm having one of these like mini like, oh no.
You want to go over a couple different options first, or do you just want to go with your gut?
I think I'm just going to go with my gut.
Okay.
I think I'm just going to say Jean-Michel Basquiat.
That is correct.
Yes.
That
is correct.
His 1982 work, Untitled, sold at auction last year for a record-setting $110,000,487,500 dollars. I don't know why I put the dollars there early.
Dollars at the end of every one.
$110 million plus an additional $487,500 in the same exact sale. It was the highest sale of any artwork by an American artist. I believe that happened in 2017.
Dollars everywhere.
All right. Anyway, that's our art talk. Now we're going to take a little break. And be back with a big thanks to our Patreon supporters and some questions. we're back. Before we get into our second round of questions, though, we want to send a big thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show.
Tell me who they are.
Well, we got to offer a big, big thanks to our quiz daddy, Tim, from California, part of Pat's Garden Service in San Diego, California. Thanks also to our team captains, Kristen and Fletcher. Thanks again for the miscorrection, Fletcher. Thanks also to Carly, Christopher, Quizmaster Josh, Moist Max, Moist Lucas, Sean, Sherry, Gil, our proverbial lightkeepers. Thank you guys so much. And also, big thanks to our Rumpelstiltskins, Michael C., Michael J.
Thank y'all.
C and J. Thanks,
you guys are amazing.
Thank you so much for your support. Still working on that lost episode. It should be up very soon. I'm serious. Probably, if not by the time this episode is up, it might be up already. Definitely by the time the next episode goes up, we have a whole lost episode, full slate of questions and everything, ready to go. Recorded on two separate dates. We had to splice them together, make a full episode out of it. So check that out. Go to our Patreon or just go to our website, thenono.com, and click the support button. It'll take you to our Patreon. You can sign up at any of our monthly pledge tiers, and we'll give you a shout out on the podcast. And yeah, you can check out all the bonus content that we have up there. Mm. Thanks, guys. All right, let's go ahead and get into our round number two.
I started first last time, so...
I will start first this time.
Yes.
That's how we'll do it.
That's it.
We're going to get a science question out of the way for Josh, since he's thirsty for a science question.
Alrighty.
Good luck to you, and good luck to him. He probably knows this.
Yeah,
you?
I probably do not.
We'll see. We'll see.
You, not so much.
The chemical process for converting natural rubber into a more durable material by the addition of sulfur or other equivalent curatives or accelerators is called what?
I do know this.
You do?
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
And I don't know how I know this. I think this must be just something maybe I've seen even looking up trivia questions or something.
Mm-hmm. It has, well, I'll let you give the answer before.
You know what? I can almost guess what you were going to say. And it was going to be some kind of reference to Star Trek.
That's right. Yep. So I know that you know that the correct answer
is vulcanization.
Vulcanization, yeah. And that's interesting. I think, you know, when I wrote this question, I was like, should I include a Star Trek thing in here? There's, you know, like a little hint.
I would have made it, to me, that would have made it from a 7 or 8 point question to like a 5 or 6 point question.
You think even with the Star Trek hint, it's a five, like a hard question?
Yep.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, some more information. The name is often attributed to, the term is often attributed to Charles Goodyear, who popularized the process, but the term vulcanization, named after Vulcan, the Roman god of fire, which could be a better hint, a more subtle hint, was actually coined by William Brockenden, friend of British scientist and inventor Thomas Hancock, who took out a patent in the process. Damn. So he was like, I got this process I'm going to patent. It's like, oh, Vulcan. Do you know of the Roman god Vulcan and his fondness of turning rubber into a more efficient material, durable material? So vulcanization is the chemical process for converting natural rubber into more durable materials.
Fantastic. All right, here is your first question.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the 30th president of the United States?
So 15 presidents ago. I think it might be easier to work backwards for me. And I'm probably going to mess this up. I'm going to do it live out of my mouth rather than my head. Just because it's a podcast, this is an audible medium, you know. Okay. So why keep it all to myself? You can laugh along if you want. Okay, currently we have Trump. Before him was President Obama. Before him was George W. Bush, who was preceded by Bill Clinton. I already lost count here. Shit. Trump, Obama, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Carter, Reagan, See, this is, I'm already fucking up the order here. Ford. Before Gerald Ford was it LBJ? And then Nixon. 30 was Kennedy, wasn't it? Was 30 John F. Kennedy?
No.
Ah, oh, fuck. I thought I remembered that out of the blue.
I'll give you one more shot.
See, it's all falling apart for me now. I better start from the bottom. George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, John Quincy Adams, James Monroe, James Madison, James Monroe. I think they're right next to each other. So we'll just call them one. This is terrible.
You're at six.
Lincoln's in there, Jackson. Let's see here. Now I'm thinking, I don't know. We'll go with Teddy Roosevelt.
The correct answer is Calvin Coolidge.
Fucking Calvin Coolidge, you son of a bitch. Number 30. You got that good number, Calvin Coolidge? Oh, man.
It's a good number.
I don't really know much about Calvin Coolidge.
Neither do I.
Do you know anything? I know nothing. Can you say any other fact about him right now?
He was president. He lived in the White House.
His name kind of dominates the iconography in your mind. Like, what did he do politically? I don't know. He was cool.
Did you have no questions about Calvin Coolidge for your President's Day trivia?
No, I didn't.
I didn't think so. You did.
Yeah. Didn't come up in my research. Not talked about. There is a great podcast about the presidents that I did not listen to all the way through. Otherwise, I would remember the Coolidge episode. But now I'm going to. I believe NPR puts that out. It's called Presidents, I think. If you're interested in that. No, I've been shying away from the presidential trivia after the debacle of my surprise President's Day theme trivia night.
Good boy.
Which was much to the chagrin of my players, including Mark here.
Hello.
Here's a business question for you. No, you know what? I'm not going to ask that. I'm going to ask you this television question instead.
Okay.
Don Herbert was better known as what children's television personality? Who was watched in the 50s and 60s and had his own world in the 80s. Now, you were a child of the 80s.
Yes.
So, I feel like you could probably sus this one out. Yeah, that's right.
What was the 80s? It was watched?
He was watched in the 50s and 60s, and he had his own world in the 80s.
I have a feeling it's going to be one of those answers that just pisses me the fuck off that I didn't know it. Children's what?
Television personality.
In the 80s was...
He had his own world. These emphasized clues are related to the titles
I'm guessing,
of the shows.
Yeah. But I'm trying to remember the name because I'm thinking of Bozo. I think it was around for a while. Bozo's World? Was that a thing? I was also thinking Captain Kangaroo. Captain Kangaroo's World. See, I just don't know the full names of these things, but I'm going to guess it's either Bozo or Captain Kangaroo. Is it one of those?
It is not.
Oh, okay. Well, fuck me then.
Hey, man, we've both been there.
Something's World. Oh. Elmo?
No.
All right.
No. Throwing in the towel?
Yeah.
Mr. Wizard. What do you think about that?
I'm really disappointed with myself.
Yeah. So you recognize Mr. Wizard.
Oh, yeah.
So I would say 90% of my teams got this wrong. About half of them probably wrote down Bozo the Clown. There was a few Mr. Rogerses in there. But yeah, watch Mr. Wizard in the 50s and 60s. And then Mr. Wizard's World, where I was introduced to him. During the 80s.
Yep.
It's pretty good. He's kind of like if Bill Nye had Mr. Rogers' temperament. That's how I describe him. It's very straightforward science, kids programming. Good stuff.
Very.
Yeah.
Engaging.
Mm-hmm.
What am I asking
you? You were just defeated after that.
Yeah. What two letters in American Sign Language require finger movement? You looked at me with such squinted eyes. You got the Gilbert Gottfried going on right now.
Well, let me tell you. Oh, that was terrible.
Yeah, it started yeah. strong, though.
Yeah, I only have one voice, really. Let's see here. I don't know American Sign Language. So this is going to be tough.
Okay.
But you've given me a multiple choice answer here.
I have.
There's at least 26 options. There's probably some signs that, you know, I don't know beyond that. But we're talking about just the letters here. So yeah. 26. And you have to move what? The hand?
Yep.
A, B, C, D, E, F, D. Just running through them all in my head. J? And U. I feel like O has a stationary. It's a vowel. So I feel like it's going to be not the vowels because it's a lot of movement going on. So, and there's loops. There's a lot of loops in all the letters.
A lot of loops everywhere.
J and U.
The correct answer is J and Z.
Mm.
Z is...
Jay-Z. You can sign his name very...
You can.
Very, very flamboyantly.
Yeah. I think J was like this, and I think Z is this.
I'm going to have to trust your judgment on there. Listeners, you'll have to trust my judgment as well.
I know. N, just, one is like this, and one is like this.
Yeah,
I remember some when trying to learn when I was a tyke.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I'm sure a lot of people have this. Like, I should learn that because you are basically saying, like, you know, there's, you know, segment of people that I might interact with that I can't communicate with, basically, or you know, I can't relate things to unless they have, you know, developed like lip reading or something, which I hear is very difficult to do. Anyway,
I was reading a thing saying that. It would be beneficial for everyone to be able to speak sign language as a second language.
Yeah.
Because in so many situations where you either need to be silent or where you can't speak, like underwater.
Absolutely.
Or if you're, you know, if you're intubated or something like that and can't, it's just helpful. It's just a wonderful thing to know.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you want to know that?
Yeah. And meanwhile, I've wasted my time, like 10 years of my life trying to learn other languages and failing.
Yeah.
Maybe ASL would stick.
Hopefully.
I don't know. Interesting. Okay. I'm going to give you an option here. Do you want a pop culture business current events question? Or do you want a music question?
Music.
You're going to pick that. All right. Listen carefully.
Okay.
What rock band is named after a single jet engine spy plane nicknamed Dragon Lady? The plane is nicknamed Dragon Lady. The band is named something else.
I'm going to guess. It's a spy plane.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess U2.
That's right. It is U2. You went to B-52s first, didn't you? And then,
no, I went to U2 first.
Oh, good.
Then I thought then I was thinking B-52s. And I was like, Bill, B-52s isn't a spy plane, though. Yep. It was a bomber.
Yep. I had a lot of teams write down B-52s.
And, I also was thinking UB-40.
Oh, yeah. But that's not a plane, is it?
No, it's a form to get unemployment, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay. So not
it was,
a,
had
not
something
a
to do with like unemployment or something like that, but
yep.
Yeah, I was like, was it UB40? I know that there's like another famous band with like a, you know, plane-esque sounding name, But yeah, you too.
Cool. Well, that wraps up our second round. Why don't we take a final break here, and then we'll be right back with our final questions. Back for our final questions. And I believe it's your turn to go first.
You are correct. Here is my last question. What state in the United States has the fewest counties?
What state has the fewest counties? This is a good question.
Thank you.
Well, it would seem that a smaller state would have smaller amounts of counties, but what defines a county line? It's probably not population, but there's got to be some kind of metric. So, I don't know. It's not like you to... like, if this was an obvious answer, like Rhode Island, I don't think that you would... you would ask it. And then you do like to catch me, though, I've noticed, on the Hawaii and Alaska answers. So, and I feel like Hawaii's small. I think it only has a single school district. And Alaska's very big, but not very populated, so I could see a small number of counties there as well. I'm going to go with Hawaii, just based on the school district thing. That's got to be connected, I think.
The correct answer is Delaware.
Oh. Delaware. Three. We're in Delaware.
Three counties.
Oh, okay. Three county. Lee County, three county.
Three county, Lee County.
Yeah. Mark, I have a geography question for you.
Oh, great.
Located in Nepal and first scaled in May of 1960, what is the highest mountain that exists within the borders of a single country's boundaries? What is the name of that mountain? It's also the seventh overall tallest mountain in the world. But it is the tallest mountain that exists all within one country's boundaries, that being Nepal.
Damn. It's in Nepal.
Mm-hmm. It's the world's tallest mountain that exists inside the boundaries of a single country.
I'm going to say K2.
No, it's not K2.
I think that's the second biggest.
That, or something. I don't know. That is the parent peak of this mountain.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yep. It is Dhaulagiri. Dhaulagiri.
Okay. Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah.
That makes me feel better.
Now you know, though. I think that's interesting.
I don't know if I'll remember that.
Dhaulagiri? Yep. Dhaulagiri. Dhaulagiri. It is the world's tallest mountain that exists within a single country's boundaries. I think that's an important fact to know. If you're a trivia aficionado, you know, that's a notable record to have.
Yeah.
You know, and that's an answer that you won't see a lot, too. So it's important to memorize it, I think.
Dhaulagiri.
Yes.
Well, I'm impressed with myself that I picked K2. And
yeah,
that it's
you were in the geographic area for sure.
Damn.
You know, but K2, I guess, is partially in India or something.
Oh, okay.
Or Pakistan, maybe. Let's see here. K2 is the highest point of the Karakoram Range and the highest point in both Pakistan and Xinjiang, China. So I don't know. Big mountain range, sounds like.
China and Pakistan are right next to each other?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And K2 is right betwixt.
When I tell you I know an embarrassingly little amount about geography, I had no clue those two countries were next to each other.
Well, now you know a little bit more. Dhaulagiri.
Dalagiri.
Dalagiri. All right. That concludes this episode of the No-No, No-Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Quizmaster Lee. You can catch me hosting No-Nonsense Trivia Live on Mondays at Three Pepper Burrito Company in downtown Fort Myers at 7:30. Then again on Wednesdays at Bury Me Brewing Company.
All over again.
Also in Fort Myers. That one's starting at 7. And each and every Thursday evening at Number 3 Craft Brews and Beer Bar in downtown Cape Coral. That show starting at 7:30. Mark, please tell our listeners where you can be found on Wednesday nights.
I'm here to let you know that I can be found Wednesday nights in historic downtown Cape Coral at Nice Guys Pints and Pies from 9 o'clock until 10:30.
Thanks for listening. Hope you had fun. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support The No-No on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page. You can also write us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com, and please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at nonontrivia. Finally, don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. 5 stars only, please. Until next time, no nonsense listeners.
Don't forget to buckle up.